and welcome to New in Events, a podcast from IBTM with me, Shanali Devereaux. This is your go-to podcast for fresh insights and practical takeaways, whether you are new to the meetings, incentive, conference and events sector or a seasoned professional. You'll hear from industry leaders, discover innovative solutions, explore evolving trends and get inspired to take your events to the next level. So let's get on with the show. And welcome to the IBTM podcast, New in Events. I'm really excited about today's episode. It is focused on Africa. And I start the episode by talking to Nadi Placa-Rodriguez, who is an incredible human. She is Director of Global Events and Experiences at the Zoo XYZ. And she currently does loads of work in Africa. She works with Afropunk, Stormzy, Afrocella, Ian Wright. Her CV is incredible. She talks about doing business there. And she also talks about what the next iteration of DEI is and getting diversity right. We then go over to the show floor where I had the enormous pleasure of speaking to Janet Karamira, who is CEO of the Rwanda Convention Bureau, and they were celebrating their 10th anniversary at IBTM. So I caught up with her about how Rwanda's convention industry has grown over the past decade and what is behind its success. Hopefully, we smash some misconceptions about working with Africa and give you some tips on what you can do in the next iteration of DEI. Tell me a bit about your journey that has brought you to the point of running a female-led, Black-owned events management agency.
Well, first and foremost, Shanali, thank you for having me.
Total pleasure.
It's really nice to kind of get back in the saddle and be talking about what I do best and what I love and do. The Zoo XYZ. It's founded in 2019, so we're just coming into our sixth year, which is crazy because it's like, where did the time go? Half of it was sucked up by COVID and the other half was like swimming, trying to climb out of all of that. And yes, it's not the focus that we have anymore. I think in the early days, when DEI was more, let's say, on trend, from my perspective of I am a Black woman being in this space, it doesn't really change for me. But that was a focus where we were really pushing that we are a Black female-led event agency, whereas now we're known for our work. Yes, we are Black and we are female, but that isn't the kind of primary focus that we have. And we produce events predominantly in the music, arts and entertainment industry that have now taken us all around the world. My most favorite continent that it takes us to is the continent of Africa, where we have been able to work on a multitude of different countries and events, bringing our skills to life there.
Brilliant. Tell me about the kind of events you organise in Africa. Where have you've just come back from somewhere, haven't you?
Zanzibar.
Zanzibar. Amazing. Yes. How many countries in Africa? Your tan is incredible. For those of you who can't see, I'm looking at a woman with an incredible tan. Is that the first time you worked in Zanzibar?
Yes, this is the first time I've worked in Zanzibar. In COVID, I was lucky enough to be stuck there for 2 months because COVID didn't exist. But yes, from a work perspective, this is the first opportunity that's presented itself.
Amazing. So what made you go back there?
Money. The opportunity to work on this project was quite enticing and exciting and really leading into this future work we want to be doing on the continent. So I'm producing an event, an award show at the moment with a brand, which we hopefully can tour across more countries on the continent as well.
Exciting. And where else have you worked on the African continent?
So Ghana, I'm half Ghanaian. My grandfather actually was the first assistant to President Nkrumah. So we have a little bit of legacy there. Nigeria is where I first started. And they say, if you can do events in Nigeria, you can do events anywhere in the world. South Africa, Rwanda, and I consulted in Kenya as well. And my dad used to live in Senegal. So we have a good reach across the continent.
That's so great. I have a very vague connection to Kenya. My dad's brother, my uncle, was editor of the Times in Nairobi. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
have
we went
been?
Out there to, yes.
Good.
We went to see him in Nairobi and down to Mombasa and just so beautiful. Why do we not do more business there? That is my question.
Well, hopefully that is what will be happening in the future. I think there are a lot more eyes on the continent. Music is, I think, what's spearheading that. And there's a lot in terms of technology and innovation, which is now being looked at. You know, these things have been happening on the continent, but now all of a sudden, like, the Western world's looking on it and it's like, oh, it exists. And it's like, we've been doing this. So how do we kind of protect that and help it grow and thrive?
Of course it exists. And of course, the infrastructure out there as well seems to be quite well developed in terms of how tourism and events work together. Tell me about your experience of bringing music events. Where do you start?
Well, a budget. It's always good when a client has one to be able to get something over the line. I think there's a misconception about working on the continent because it's Africa, what we've grown up seeing on TVs, that actually we don't need budget to activate. So brands who are looking to come over, it's really important that they have money that can work with locals to be able to invest in what they want to produce. This trip that I recently went on was a recce, went to go and look at the space that we were producing in, meet loads of people, take direction, understand, move things around a bit, jiggle it. It's a whole process in terms of from this conceptualization, this idea that someone has versus the reality of what that looks like, then building it on the ground. All part of the process.
Amazing. How developed is the infrastructure out there in terms of working with event organizers and tech companies?
Every country is different, I will say that. There's levels to this. Every country will have its own list of challenges and list of things that will support what you're doing. And it's really important to have a local contact on the ground when you're going so you can sense check, even if it's rates. Rates can always fluctuate when an international provider is coming in. But really to be able to go through every single element with a fine-tooth comb, it is so varied. In Nigeria, churches do a lot of large-scale productions. So be it that you have a lot of AV in the country, sometimes you have to drive it up or fly it up from another country or move it across. So yeah, it's a lot. So long-term, I want to be able to really support that infrastructure of really building an African touring circuit so that there is easy routes to be able to move equipment around and people as well that have experience that can support other countries that maybe aren't as developed.
That sounds amazing. And exactly what you've said, we are talking about Africa because that's where your work is based. But that is true of all our IBTM listeners who are global in their reach. It is always really important to have that local contact with the local knowledge culturally about how things work because they can facilitate and make experiences happen for you. Tell me, you are also the co-founder of the Association of Black Event Professionals. Tell me about your work. Why is it important to you?
The Association of Black Event Professionals was launched off the back of a report that the Zoo XYZ did. After we launched our first report in 2021, it was called Black in the Boardroom. It looked at the racial disparity across UK event trade bodies and associations and basically how we were represented. And at that time in 2021, there was not one black person on the board. I think there were two brown women who I think no longer in their roles. And now there, I think, is one black man. There just felt a need to be able to hold some of these organizations accountable for the things that they were promising to do in the industry at that time, which I think a lot of people felt. DEI at that time, it was sexy. We have now moved on to Net 30. We're moving on and it's different. And at that time, it was really important to highlight that. So what we've done now is we've started a new series of events called Black Events Matter. And we've really brought together a lot of black event professionals in the community that are producing large events and working within that way to be able to see how can we collectively come together and support each other. We want to be driven by data. We need a lot of information in to be able to help us steer and help us make more impact in the long term. So that is where the association will be evolving to this year.
Fantastic. I am so interested in what you were saying about DEI being sexy, being the focus. I really feel that we have moved on from those conversations. We have moved on from those hires and we have moved on from how we talk about it in the workplace. Do you want to highlight anything about the changes and where we are now?
To be real, it felt like it was a bit of a song and dance and a show, really and truly. I don't feel that companies necessarily really valued those roles that they then put in place. And once those roles were put in place, was their budget to assist the things that maybe they've done the research and have found that these things are required in workplaces. To what extent, I'm not sure. So I kind of feel like it was a bit of a song and dance. And now it's kind of back in the reality of where it was before. And I feel like it's kind of been a bit performative over that time. I know people who've been put in DEI roles that are no longer there. And look at what's been happening in the news lately. I think Meta or someone released all of, they were like, no, it doesn't exist. Equal opportunity, no, it doesn't exist.
So funny how we get really excited about initiatives and then we retract about those initiatives before we've really understood what the purpose and the outcome of those initiatives were, which was to be able to have wider inclusivity in the workplace and at our events. Do you do work in inclusivity in the event space?
I mean,
you are. No, beyond you existing as work is inclusivity in the event space. I guess where I'm going with this is that how is it that we at events can help to be more inclusive in our outputs?
It comes at every single level across every single width. It's always thought of more junior roles that can be in those positions. But if you think of not even just the senior roles, but also where you're pushing RFPs out to, who is your agents list, who is it involved that you consult with, that you speak to? And that can be on any single thing. And I think it just has to be inclusive across the board. And it filters all the way down. It's not just, okay, we've hired some juniors that can come and shadow and make cups of tea. And if you do that, great. But then what? What can they do after they've made that tea? What's their then progression route within that organization? And can they be supported with that experience? My focus, I think, has been highlighting that and where I can do in the work I do, which is predominantly in the entertainment space. We have a lot of people that look like us on stage, but not so many backstage. So understanding the people that are making decisions, trying to facilitate the movement of what, let's get that diverse.
Is that about visibility or is it about education? What is it?
It's all of it. It is visibility. I want people to be able to see people like themselves in these roles. I think it is about the education. When there are large brands who are monetizing off of the culture, how is it that they can actually invest back into that? What does that look like if you're just taken into different territories, countries, regions? Like, it's applicable in everything. Like, who is your audience?
You've taken me off on a lovely reverie that may or may not make it into the podcast. Sorry, Mike. But I was just thinking about how I just stopped lecturing at the University of Hertfordshire to give time to my new role. There, we have a really great widening access and participation scheme. So you visibly have a lot of people of colour who come and do the events management courses. And I just wish I could have like fielded them in your direction and gone.
You still can.
I still can. I think I'm going to get my lecturers at the university to just field people your way and let them see all of that backstage stuff that happens.
The way I envision the zoo and the role I play within this organization and extended to the association is a stepping stone. At whatever level that can be, let us be the stepping stone that can propel you into the area that you want to go to in the industry. I'm on enough conversations on enough boards to be able to rally my network to be able to say, okay, well, I may know someone and let me push you in that direction. And I have a good enough relationship with that person to say, actually, I know that they're going to invest in you in that role and can support you. And if for whatever reason it doesn't work out, you can always step back.
Amazing. I love that. It made me realize when you talked about it, you said, when you come into the zoo, how did you choose the name?
This is my fourth company. So for my whole life, I've only had one full-time job. When I was 18, I worked at NatWest Bank and it was very monotonous and it was very boring. And I decided that I didn't want to be there anymore. So when I went to university, well, just before I had my daughter, and when I was at university, I was headhunted and I was lucky enough to be able to have a job and not need the experience where people got stuck in that circle and cycle of, I can't get a job without experience, can't get experience without the job. One company in started with a friend, an old school friend, didn't work out. Great. We argued over £200. Hey, if we're arguing over £200, there's no money in the budget. Well, what are we going to do when it's 200K? Left that, started up a business with another friend of mine. She tried to steal everything from me. So walked away from that. And then I was like, what do I do? Who am I? Do I even do this? Do I get a full-time job? No, that was not my fate. My longest standing friend, who is actually our head of events now, we were in Ghana working on a project. We were just having a good night, you know, just enjoying the nighttime breeze. And I was like, I want something that's a bit ominous. It doesn't say what it says on the tin. And I said, sometimes I feel like when we work in this industry, there's so many different personalities and cultures and people. And it's like a menagerie of all people. And it was like, the zoo.
Oh, the zoo.
And then someone had the zoo.
Oh, no.
So we went, so we were like, the zoo.xyz. Because also when you're speaking to people, and I love it when we have conversations with clients and they reference it. We're going to have a conversation. If you say XYZ, that is such a term that's used so often that it just fits.
So I love like, that. What a great story. That's an incredible story. We are in a menagerie, aren't we? It's fantastic.
It's crazy.
So one of the things that we talk about in another podcast is something that Alistair Turner has brought up, which is that idea of democratization of content. So how do we do that in our menagerie of events? Democratization of content, meeting people where they are, with the information they need in the way that they need to receive it.
I think this is going to be really, really interesting. In COVID, I think we probably had the closest touch point on this in terms of we now can't physically be at events, but how do we be able to reach audiences who are in their own homes, whatever that may look like in their current situations? And I think I mentioned this to you earlier, but I kind of shied away from it in COVID. I didn't want to be sucked into this virtual, even when people were writing IRL, we meeting IRL, I'm just not a fan of it. I think my passion of producing events and creating experiences for people, it outweighed what I wanted to invest in, what this new world could look like. Fast forward 5 years now, it's like, okay, now actually, how can we? Because I think there's a lot more on mental health these days. There's a lot more on people's accessibility and people where people get it wrong. So in understanding and how they can get it right and reach people in their homes, I'm personally very excited to see what that could look like. Number one, bring a budget, because I think without that, if you're looking at equality as a whole, there are so many different kind of realms of that that you need to tap into, and they all require something different. I'm interested to see what Alistair can come up with and how I can also contribute to what that trend can look like.
I love the bring a budget idea, because that is really what it's about. Put your money where your mouth is. If you genuinely want people to engage, if you genuinely want to do business overseas in new realms, you have to put a budget behind it, because you're saying this is important to me and therefore I am absolutely going to pay for that. I think that's a really important point. With the XYZ on the zoo, I'm now thinking maybe I should start an events company called IRL.
I love that.
I'll take a 5% share.
Okay. All right. You will. It's yours. I totally feel about what you were saying about COVID, because it did really feel, and we all said it, that the power of what we do is the power of those human connections and how we leverage and engineer those to do bigger, better, and more beautiful things. So with that in mind, what bigger, more better, and beautiful things is ZUXYZ planning to do in the coming years?
So much. Last year was really difficult for us. In order to talk about going forward, I have to talk about the past. One of the hardest years we've had outside of COVID, and I think it was a shift in the industry, whether it was like subconsciously related to Diddy or Trump. I think there were kind of influences of all these things that are happening in the world that really hit the entertainment industry wide and far. And it wasn't just me who felt that, so it was quite reassuring. And stepping into 2025, we had some conversations of the back end of the year. And literally, what are we, 3 weeks in? It's very crazy, very exciting. I'm very much about the universe. When I see 1111 on the phone or 1616, it happens all the time. Very powerful thoughts about manifestation. Have you ever read The Celestine Prophecy?
Yes, a long time ago.
So that book, which was actually given to me by one of my business partners who tried to steal everything, actually changed my life.
Amazing.
Really allowed me to look at things differently. And I've embedded that within the company. And I think everyone has also taken that on. And collectively with this energy, we've started manifesting. So we had a board, a temporary board, who have been supporting us to give structure as to how we move forward. Because I'm a girl from Deptford, South London, who enjoyed doing events. I had my daughter when I was 19, and now I'm soon 40 running an international events agency. I've figured it out, but there's a lot that I don't know that is going to take me to that next level. So what is it that I need? And I've been getting support in terms of guiding and helping structure what that can look like. So now, at the beginning of this first quarter, we're already looking at potentially $500,000 of revenue from this first quarter alone. And it's taken us into the regions that we want to build in 10 years' time. I'm very excited for the opportunities that have been awarded to myself and the company, and that we're also being able to touch more people and have them have extended experience for us as well.
I'm so excited for you. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
Oh my goodness. I love that you say, this book changed my life. And if you're part of my tribe, you're going to buy into this book. Otherwise, you're not part of my tribe. Because those lessons that you learned about those people who are not your tribe, we're not fighting over £200.
That's 100%.
Not what I do in my life.
This is my tribe. This is what you believe in the universe. You're on board with me. And that's where we go from here. I love that. It seems that you're deeply value-driven in everything that you do.
I'd like to think so.
No, it definitely comes across. Oh, I've loved talking to you. I love your energy. I'm so excited about your future. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Shanali.
Right.
Honestly, it's such an honour.
Such a pleasure. I have the enormous pleasure of talking to Janet Karamira, who's currently CEO of the Rwanda Convention Bureau, and she's been CEO since March 2023, but they have had a presence here at IBTM World for the last 10 years, and that presence has built up more and more. And we're going to be talking about some of the exciting things that Rwanda is doing in terms of raising their profile, but also the exciting reasons that you should be doing business with Rwanda and beyond, especially in the context of you guys being here for 10 years. What stereotypes and barriers are there, and how have you been breaking them down?
We started in 2014. The first time we appeared here, we had a 3x3 stand, which was provided by IBTM, which was good. Already they were seeing potential for Africa, I guess, by hosting us. Since then, our government made a decision to actually create the Convention Bureau, because we came as a small department and tourism board. Then we became a Convention Bureau. So since then, every year we've been participating. And every year you meet with people and you explore and you educate them on what Rwanda has to offer, and you share the journey Rwanda has had, especially since we have a tragic past, the genocide against the Tutsi that happened in 1994. So people still associate us with that. And it's fine. That is our history. That is our reality. But a lot has happened in 30 years. We're one of the fastest growing economies in Africa. We have development. We have convention centers. We have sports arenas. We have stadiums, hotels with well-known brands. So that's what we also want to be known for. We can be known for the genocide, but we can also be known for more. And we really hope that people get to learn about that. You mentioned the stereotypes. Stereotypes are the usual of Africa: safety, cleanliness. Do you even have infrastructure? Do you have a convention center? Do you have hotels? So our main job coming to these a lot of the time is just educating people, allowing them to see that there is more to Africa and to Rwanda specifically than what they just see on TV.
It's a sad thing that that is what they see on TV and then formulate an opinion. How hard is it to change hearts and minds from an exhibition stand? I mean, I know you've been on stage today. What is it that you face when people have conversations with you?
Luckily, I do give credit to people. I think in general, it's more of just not knowing. And when they do know, things change. That's why Rwanda has been able to attract a lot of events for the first time on the continent. For example, Women Deliver, which is the largest women's empowerment conference globally, was hosted in Africa last year for the first time in Rwanda. We're hosting the FIA, which is the International Automobile Federation, their annual General Assembly, and their prize giving in December, in a coming few weeks. So we're going to have all the F1 champions and legends and everybody coming to Rwanda. And again, first time in Africa. Next year, we're hosting the World Championships for road cycling. Again, first time in Africa. And that is because Rwanda makes the effort and goes out there and shares our story and shares what we have to offer to unblock some of these ideas that people have and just allow them to see that there's more to Rwanda and to the continent. We want to act as a gateway to the continent, which is why we have a national airline that flies to many destinations across Africa, but also Europe. We've free visa for people to come get your visa on arrival. So if you're coming from London, you are part of the Commonwealth, so you don't have to pay for a visa. So you're part of the Commonwealth. We have people from the Francophonie countries or the African Union. They don't even have to pay for their visas. All those elements are what government has put in place to allow people to come to Rwanda, but also see your way as being like, okay, I've seen Rwanda. What else is available on the continent?
It sounds like you've had a really strong battle of building relationships with stakeholders to enable this to happen. So when you talk about government and visas, you know, these are not short conversations. They have to understand the value of the international tourism investment.
For sure. And we're very lucky. I think the good thing, we have a visionary leadership. We have a strong coordinated government that does see the value of tourism and even more MICE. So we're very fortunate in that sense. So we're really well supported. If we have a new trend or new idea that we need to, what they were seeing at other destinations or something that can give us a competitive advantage, if it makes sense, they will support us in it. So we're quite lucky, which is why, like I mentioned, we had small hotels at the beginning of our journey when we came in 2014. We didn't even have a convention center. The convention center was being built and we're saying, in 2 years it'll be built, but come to Rwanda. So 2016, we had a convention center. And other investments follow, because what we see in Rwanda is that sometimes the government has to take the leap, take the risk, so that private sector can follow. So whether it's building the hotel, some of them that have now been sold to private sector and such, but government had to take that leap. The BK Arena, which is our 10,000-seater sports arena, was built so that people can see investments around sports, tourism. What does that look like? Refurbishing our stadium to upgrade it from 20,000 seats to 45,000 seats. What does that look like? That brings sports events to your country. We're investing in building our new airport that we open in 2028. That's going to increase the number of arrivals in our country. So all that is government that does that. And with that, though, it brings private sector alongside it.
Do you feel that there is a really strong argument for people to come out, given that the infrastructure is relatively new? What have you been enabled to do that more established destinations with older convention centers and stuff have not been able to do? Have you got any kind of innovations?
I think what we have enabled to do is seeing direct legacy and direct impact on events. When we have an event like Women Deliver and you have conversations around women's health, women's rights, women's education, you're seeing it directly from the people who are on the grassroots. You're not having the event. Previously, they had it in Canada. That's very far away from a lot of where their beneficiaries sit. So now you're having conversations in Rwanda, where Rwanda is a leading country on women's rights. When you have those kind of events in other countries where you're closer to the grassroots, that's the impact of these events. I really would encourage people to really see it as that when we have a scientific conference, directly our doctors benefit from it, our professors benefit from it, our students benefit from it. We're launching one of the first vaccine manufacturing plants in Rwanda. So in the next year when we come and bid for a conference on vaccine manufacturing or vaccinations or anything, you're going to have the direct tie and you're going to see the impact of it. Sometimes some systems that are well developed, it's a bit hard to see that impact because it's a bit far away. But in our country, through the RCB, you can have a minister come to your event. You can have a different leader in the private sector come to your event and have that direct exposure and such. So you're closer to the impact.
I love that because I think that the wider impact is often forgotten. We come to a destination because we think people are enjoying tourism in that destination, but actually it's about education and learning and sharing experience and a co-creation of that experience.
That's exactly it.
So what does the future hold for you guys?
So the future, we're really focusing on our priority sectors. Like I mentioned in my presentation at the impact stage, it's really looking at priority sectors whereby we have technology, manufacturing, agro-processing, sports, tourism, with sports and entertainment as a driving element, manufacturing, like I mentioned. So I think some of those elements are key priorities, aviation, logistics. So I think looking at that, it's really what we want to focus and help our country. They've made them the priority. So how do we bring the conferences and the experts and the global community to Rwanda to get exposed to some of what we're doing? And potentially these could be investors. It only takes 6 hours to open a business in Rwanda. So
fantastic.
You could come and open a business. You
fantastic.
Can open an NGO. It's really important for us to do that.
It's so exciting. And I love what you said about it being a gateway to opening business to Africa, because I think it's really,
yeah,
really important.
Yeah, because our market, we want people to not just look at our market as Rwanda. Our market is the whole East Africa. We're so close, and I'm even further because of the national airline, but just looking at Uganda, Kenya, Democratic Republic of Congo, Tanzania, Burundi, they're all neighboring for us. So when you have an event in Rwanda, don't just look at it as, oh, Rwandan citizens are going to attend. No, EAC citizens are going to attend. African citizens are going to attend because it's easy for them to get to the country. So you're opening to those markets.
Fantastic.
Not just a Rwandan market of 14 million people. It's more. It's 100 millions that we're talking about.
That's great. Oh, thank you very much. And
you're
thank
welcome.
You for joining me from the IBTM World Floor today.
Thank you so much for your time.
It's a pleasure.
Oh my goodness. If there is something I absolutely love, it is talking to incredible women who are really good at their jobs, but also really, really passionate about what they do. What I love about these women is they're both passionate about the continent of Africa. First of all, Nadu stormed into the recording studio, this tall, charismatic firecracker of a woman, full of energy and jewelry and long nails. Her energy was incredible from the moment that she walked in. And that totally came across in her passion for her company and her passion for her work in DEI. I love what she said about DEI. She's absolutely right. We're seeing these jobs being lost in the industry and not necessarily being replaced with initiatives or metrics about how successful they were or how we can do better. What is the next iteration of DEI? I think we need to really refocus on this because the conversations are not over. We're looking at what's happening worldwide and we're looking at what's happening in the UK. Can we all work together to be more inspired by getting all of the cultures that are involved involved? And in saying that, Janet, how incredible it is that she got everybody involved in putting Rwanda on the map. I think it's so wonderful how all of her stakeholders got behind her to help her with visas, with infrastructures, with investment. If you want to invest in Africa, you got to believe and you've got to put your money where your mouth is. Rwanda Convention Bureau's motto is unlocking unforgettable experiences. And if you want to do that for your attendees, think about Africa for your next visit. Really love that episode. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, everyone. Claudia Hall here, Exhibition Director for IBTM World. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast, New in Events. Your host for season two is Shanali Devereaux, and executive producer is Mike Fletcher. Don't forget to mark your calendar for IBTM World in Barcelona, taking place from the 18th to 20th of November. And if you found this episode insightful, please share it with anyone else you think may appreciate it. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.